Comparison is a great way of benchmarking yourself. If you lack envy but have aspiration, it can be incredibly positive fuel.
When we design and we're creative, I ask this question every time. What shelf do we want to sit on? What other brands do we want to be with? If we were in a store, what other brands would be in that store? If we're on a shelf, what other brands would be on that shelf? What type of aesthetic do we want to be different than but sit among?
I actually think comparison is incredibly healthy when you're comparing yourself to someone who has scaled more than you, advanced more than you, grown more than you, developed more than you.
My whole life trying to fight to win, it was very hard for me to give up the recognition and the titles to other people. But once I did that, it was like night and day.
You're listening to Mind Shift, a podcast with Aaron McManus and Earl McManus. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm kind of in my super chill mode. We're here in, as you keep saying, the jungles of Mexico. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And it's funny how environments do affect you. You know, we're in this environment. It's incredibly beautiful, relaxing. And so you can just walk and reflect and get into like an internal personal space. So I'm going to have to pull myself back out of my inner world and have this conversation today.
No, I think it's good. It's good to document this and to do a podcast while we're here. I mean, I think even from yesterday to today, there's so much rest and that's gone into it. It's always really interesting. Whenever we come to a place like this, something dramatic always happens.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of drama or controversy or good or bad thing happens. And, you know, we had just gotten out of the sauna or something. And I got this crazy, you know, message from someone. And me and you, I think we have mastered the art of not taking too long to get stressed out. You know, we laughed about it for a few minutes and then we moved on. And so it's good to be here doing this and having different perspectives.
One thing my brother Alex would always say is, hey, your crisis is not my crisis, or your procrastination is not my crisis. And because a lot of times people will come at you really hard and fast with something that is super important to them, either because they procrastinated or because they're over the top emotional or because it's like their singular thing they're focused on. Yeah. And they just like download it on your life. And I think I always had the default mode of, oh, you have a crisis now, it's my crisis. And just watching him one time, he said, hey, your procrastination is not my crisis. And I adopted that really fast. I realized, oh, why would I accept everyone else's crisis? Like, if I'm doing the hard work of making choices and living a life that makes me dominantly crisis-free.
Yeah.
Because I do think you can live a life that it's not problem-free and not challenge-free, but it is crisis-free. That you then have to then create the discipline of not allowing everyone else's crisis who does not take on those disciplines, then like just absolutely like put your life into tornado after tornado after tornado.
Yeah, it's really interesting, right? I think it really depends on what it is.
Yeah.
I often find that certain friends are able to bring you into their crisis in a healthy way. Hey, can you give me a perspective? Can you give me a third, a second look at this and help me navigate how to get through the situation. But crisis is a really unique thing, and everyone's different in crisis, but also everyone's different in general. Yeah. We have so many different characteristics that define us, and one of the characteristics that defines you, and I think maybe me sometimes, I sometimes make things worse. I have had the tendency in the past to blow up or get upset or you know, really get frustrated with people. But I think as I've grown older and I've seen more in life, there's very few things that surprise me now. And I do find that there are certain characteristics that I look for in people before we work with them or before we become friends with them, and how they deal with crisis is one of those.
It is. Well, we talked about a little bit earlier about what are the characteristics in people that you know that make them compelling. You know, because a lot of times people focus on the negative on people. Like there's so many Instagram posts and TikTok posts on how to deal with narcissists and how to deal with psychopaths and how to deal with sociopaths. And I find them all really, really fascinating. But there's a lot fewer of them on how to identify a compelling person. You know, how to identify a healthy person, how to surround yourself with people who elevate you. And, so maybe we should have as much research and focus on how to identify a compelling person than it is how to identify a narcissist. Because sometimes I think when you're actually engaging a person who's living at a really high level of optimal performance. You may not want to be around them because you're not living at a level of optimal performance. So they become agitating, or just by virtue of their presence, they become convicting. And I think where we move at our best is when we're really drawn to those people that are both aspirational. They have a characteristic, maybe not everything about them, but there's something about them that's incredibly aspirational. You go, wow, I want to become more like that. And have like this great relationship of not envying a person, but using their journey as a catalyst for your own journey. I saw this great conversation about, I think it was Adam Grant, maybe he was saying it, that he used to believe that comparison is the thief of joy, like that statement that's out there. He says he doesn't believe that anymore. And ironically, I've really not ever believed that. And he said, what I've realized is envy is the thief of joy. And I go, this is funny. Adam Grant probably isn't like a person of faith that I know of, but he's now quoting the Bible. You know, he's discovered that actually the characteristic in the Bible of envy, that's what steals your joy. And, you know, comparison is a great way of benchmarking yourself. And if you lack envy but have aspiration, it can be incredibly positive fuel.
I mean, when we design and we're creative, I often ask the question, I ask this question every time. What shelf do we want to sit on? What other brands do we want to be with? If we were in a store, what other brands would be in that store? If we're on a shelf, what other brands would be on that shelf? What type of aesthetic do we want to be different than, but sit among? Mm-hmm. Right? And when you go into, I think, designing something or creating something, you know, when we created the arena, we're like, we want to create a community, but then we also want to create a conference that's like TED, but maybe a little younger, more entrepreneurial based and business based and podcast based and creator content.
And really for me, more personal development based. But yeah, TED was definitely a benchmark because I've been a part of TED for 20 years.
Yes.
When we were designing the arena. And I actually didn't see TED as a comparison for a conference as much as a comparison for a community from which a conference came out of. Because when I first went to TED, I thought of it as a conference. And then I quickly realized what they're really trying to do is build a community that meets together at their conference. And I really like that. I don't know if it's achieved that, the level that it hoped to, but...
TED?
Yeah.
Well, I think it did.
No, I don't know if it created the community as much as created the learning environment.
Yeah.
I think it's much harder to create a community, but obviously it's a movement all over the world. So that, for me, is...
Where else can you go where you meet Jane Goodall?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
And Regina Spektor. And these fantastic...
And people like Adam Grant and people, you know, like Simon Sinek and people like that, you know, Tony Robbins. They were all...
I think they did okay.
Yeah, they did okay. Yeah. And, you know, I don't even talk about the people I just had fun meeting and interacting with, you know, and talking to. I mean, some of my greatest memories are being in the bathroom with Robin Williams.
Was that at TED?
Yeah, TED.
Yeah. I think they did all right.
Yeah. And, you know, so you get to interact and be affected and impacted by these people. And so when I thought about the arena, I actually thought that's a great benchmark because they're the best in the world. I mean, why benchmark against something that isn't the best in sense in the world? Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, sent me this text this past week where he sent me a video of John Wooden when he was the coach of, after he'd retired from UCLA.
Okay.
And he goes, hey, this reminds me of what you were, you know, saying to me and how, and what you've helped me kind of gain in a perspective. And I'm like, anytime anybody compares me to John Wooden, I'm in, like, you know. But John Wooden said, when I came to UCLA, there were board members who found joy in beating bad teams by 51 points. And he said, there's no joy in that. And then he backed off. He goes, well, there's some joy in it.
A little bit of joy.
A little bit of joy. He goes, but the real joy is when you find teams that are peers, teams that are as good as you, teams that are even better than you, and you compete against them and you beat them. And that, he said, that's where the real joy is, when you go through the struggle of becoming great. And so in a sense, you can create an illusion that you're great by playing teams that just don't have the recruiting power and don't have the talent base and don't have the financial base, there is a difference between, you know, UCLA beating Elon University, where I went to school for 2 years, or UCLA beating North Carolina, which where I finished and graduated from. They're both great schools, but not great basketball schools.
Right.
And when you beat North Carolina, you should celebrate. And you have to work for it. Yeah. You don't usually beat the best by accident. You beat them because you've prepared, you've done the hard work, and you found the joy in elevating, becoming the very best. And that, for me, is... Well, since we were talking about the arena, that for me is, in a sense, our ambition, the arena going...
We talked about comparison, though,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, because we're comparing, and I've been comparing, going, where have I gained my best learning in the world?
Yeah.
Where have I gained my best access to people who have elevated me? Where have I gained my best community? And I think I've tried to take those experiences and brought them together to the arena. And so in a sense, I have, in my mind, tried to bring the best of TED, the best of Mosaic, and the best learning I ever had from multiple arenas. And then you go, wouldn't it be incredible to create a community where you elevate together and it becomes the future of education and the future of high-level community where everybody just keeps sharpening each other. And then you told me this week about this person, I'm not sure who they are as much, but they have over 1 million followers on Instagram, and he just posted one of my talks called Sharpening the Axe.
Yeah, I think his name's Nick Bear or Nick Barr Fitness, I think is on IG.
Yeah, I checked it out. He seems pretty elite.
Yeah, he's a monster in the gym and on the running. But he posted, what did he post? I screenshotted it.
The talk from Mosaic on sharpening your axe, sharpening your edge.
So find your edge.
Yeah, find your edge. But it's really from the passage in Ecclesiastes that says if the edge of your axe is dull, then it takes more work. So you have to take time to sharpen your axe. And so I took that talk about sharpening your edge, and also then the passage in the Proverbs that Solomon also gives us, that as steel sharpens steel, so one person sharpens another. And that, to me, that's the whole philosophy behind the arena, is that I want to be the sharpest person I can.
But even beyond the arena, it feels like that should be a part of our daily lives.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And so, where's the line with comparison, right? When comparison turns to envy, yeah, or jealousy, that's when it becomes unhealthy. That's like the shadow side of comparison. But the positive side of comparison is all of the greatest people I've ever seen compare themselves to other people.
Yeah.
They're the people who I think are able to shorten that distance between, okay, I just did something. Like guys who go on stage before you, it sucks. It sucks to go on stage after you. That's really what it is. I really actually feel bad for people when they put you right before someone that I know maybe is a newer communicator, because it's really hard to go up after a great communicator, right? So, and then but we were at an event this last weekend, and the moment we were sitting at the dinner, the guy who was running the event sat down. I was like, how do I do that? How do I do it what Irwin did? And I was like, well, I don't know if like you can just go from where you're at to doing that, but there's some things that I think you could do that would get you to a place where you would be more comparatively in a similar league, right? And so where does it become unhealthy?
Well, if I could shoot my arrow out in space, I hope I hit a target. I think envy is when you want the benefit and the outcome without the process and the struggle. Healthy comparison is where you learn from the other person's process and you begin to adapt the disciplines and the hard work of the process to move toward your best outcome.
What's up, dog? Come on in.
Oh, wow, look at this.
Let's say hi. How's the boot?
Huh?
How's the boot?
I rode the bike here. Just
you rode the bike?
Yeah, dude.
Good to see you, brother.
Hey, bro. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
Welcome. Have a seat if you like. We're in the middle of shooting our podcast.
Do your thing. Do it.
So we've added a friend here. Yeah. We've got Nico in from Austin, joining us in the jungle. And just break it down. Go.
Yeah, Nico, one of the things we're talking about is, I guess maybe the basic question is comparison good or bad? Does it help you or hurt you when you compare yourself to someone else?
Okay.
And one of the things I was saying is that I think it hurts you when you're comparing yourself to someone who's not as good as you, because you're just making yourself feel better.
But do we ever do that? We always...
Oh, people do that every day.
Give me an example of that.
Okay. You have a nephew.
Yeah.
And when he came out to LA, he thought he was an extraordinary basketball player.
Yes.
And he was just telling us how he was going to crush everybody. Then he came out and played with us, and he was terrible.
Okay.
And after, he said, I guess I've been playing with really bad players. And so you can create an illusion of yourself.
Sure.
Yeah. You know.
Okay, I get that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of things I'm good at if I'm comparing myself against people who are bad at it. But the moment I get in the room with someone who's actually good at it, then I realize, oh, it's like Jeff Bezos saying he wanted to major in quantum mechanics until they asked their friend a question that took him several days to not answer, and he answered it in 2 or 3 minutes. Then he realized, I'm not good at this. And he was probably really good at it. He just got around someone who was great at it. And so I actually think comparison is incredibly healthy when you're comparing yourself to someone who has scaled more than you, advanced more than you, grown more than you, developed more than you, and you don't let it go to envy. And we're saying, I think the difference between envy and comparison is that envy wants the benefit and the outcome, but not the discipline and the sacrifice.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this on the pod we recorded earlier this week after your event. But like, if you look at Damon, you look at Edwin, you're like, I don't want to end up in prison. Like, you don't want the life he lived, but you want the outcome.
Yeah, you don't want the process, right? But you want the outcome. That's what
I was saying. And maybe, so you have to figure out, like, maybe wisdom is, how do I find that process without the consequences of their bad decisions?
Like, Damon's story is amazing.
Yeah.
But how to not replicate a testimony, but actually, or a testament, but actually, like, recreate maybe the ending process.
Like, maybe there was like a psychological or character shift because of 5 years in prison. But can you make that shift without 5 years of prison? My answer is yes. Let's figure that out. You know? But I'm just kind of curious. Nico, since you just jumped in with us, and when you look at people that you admire, it could be in the business world, in the relationship world, it could be sports world, it could be people you know personally or people you just see from afar, what are some of the characteristics that you find most compelling? Like, you go, I really admire this person because of this.
Confidence, for sure.
Confidence.
Yeah, like, when they speak, it's like they don't ever, you can't see a glimpse of them second guessing themselves. That's what I think is the biggest one for me. Like, the one I noticed right off the bat. For example, like Ed Milet, when I hear him speak or whatever, when I hear you speak, there's no second guess of what they're saying. They don't really even have, they're so confident, they don't even really think about what the next thing coming out of their mouth
is.
They're just going, yeah. You know?
Yeah, how long did it take to get there?
Because you know when you did the event for us, when you headlined for us
at the Collective,
you were going to do the 7 frequencies of communication, and then you read the room and you switched it.
Yeah,
you have to be really
you really do. Yeah.
At being able to do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you turned a rocket ship into a submarine.
it doesn't really, like,
yeah, because we were underwater.
So how do you get to that place where you're so confident about the next words you're going to speak?
One of the things I tell people is try not to speak on subjects where you have to speak 100% of what you know on that stage. And so one of the ways you can exude a lot of confidence is teaching 10% of what you know. Because you have a lot of information. You have a lot you could teach. Sure. So you're not thinking, what am I going to say next? You're having to eliminate things that you could say. You know, so I'm not looking for the next thing. I'm blocking out 10 other directions I could go in and picking the thing that, by reading the room, I think this is the most important thing right now. And so I think some of it is just behind confidence. I tell people, when you try to build confidence on talent, it becomes arrogance. When you build confidence on discipline, it actually becomes confidence. And so what you're seeing when you see a speaker who's highly confident is not their talent, but their discipline. The preparation that took them to that level of fluidity in their communication, you know? And yeah, so I mean, I think of, like, you know, surfers. You know, when I tried to get up on the surfboard, it didn't go well. You know? And in fact, I would say that if I were the only measure of surfing, it's impossible. It cannot be humanly done.
Yeah.
And yet when you watch someone who's a great surfer, it just seems so fluid.
Yeah.
and you put it all in the category of talent, but you don't see the hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of times they fell off that board and fell off that board and fell off that board. And the discipline gave the talent the context for it to grow.
No, I mean, I think surfing is a great example because I've surfed people who were legends and incredible at their craft, but I lacked the confidence in different water. Like, I was really good if I knew the wave, knew the ocean, knew the way that everything moved. But the moment I went to Hawaii and surfed North Shore, where it's 10-foot waves, the size wasn't the issue. It was the ecosystem and the environment I was so unfamiliar with. You know, looking out and being around people who were literally on HBO documentaries and like Kelly Slater's in the water and you're so nervous. Yeah. But then again, you're having to like go and surf uncharted waters, at least to myself. And so how do you familiarize yourself and with new ecosystems and environments?
That's a really good question. Because in some sense, I had harsh waves when I had to speak at the conference. You know, and so sometimes you get up there and you're just riding the wave and there's just so much momentum. And sometimes you realize, oh, there's an undertow right now. You know, people are tired, it's gone too long.
From 10 to 7. Unexpected.
The event's supposed to be over.
No, but we did the same thing at the Arena conference. Like our first day of the conference was so preloaded with speakers that, I mean, we didn't get to lunch till 2 and people were suffering. And they were exhausted. And I realized, looking at people's faces, and I was like, oh no, I messed up day one. And we fixed it for day 2 and we were able to spread it out a bit more. But you know, you don't really always know. You have to like learn and on the fly and adjust.
Yeah, and I think the way you're able to develop the skill set for that is you put yourself in uncomfortable situations. The person's always speaking in a really safe environment isn't gonna be able to speak when things go bad. And just like with surfing, if you're always surfing in fairly safe waters, when the water becomes a little bit unsafe, it becomes too much.
Yeah.
So what I would say is that you have to become an expert in safe waters and then move yourself to a little bit less safe waters and then become an expert, like to where you can do it almost as second nature. I don't think you're ready for the next level of tumultuous waters, unknown waters, until you can do the lesser waters as second nature. And that's why like learning how to communicate with 2 or 3 people is a great starting point. Because it's lesser waters. It's you're not gonna drown here. But even like doing a podcast, Nico, could feel unnerving. It could make you nervous and go, I don't know if I can do this or something like that. Not that you feel that way. Yeah. But once you start doing this over and over and over again, then you go, okay, now I know how to talk about a subject. Now I know how to talk a little bit more like spontaneously. And, I'm not as bad as I thought. Or I was terrible, but I'm better. You know, and you just keep slowly developing. And then the room of 10, and then the room of 20. I think the problem is a lot of people want to go from not knowing how to have a conversation with 2 people to speaking to 2,000.
Yeah.
Because that looks so much more exciting. It's way more impressive, right?
That sounds like a lot of vomiting before.
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing that confidence piece is like when the room is dead or tired or the energy's not right, and then the person that goes up there at the end, when everyone's ready to go, like shares what they're gonna share, and then the whole room's like, wait, that's it? He's not gonna keep going? Those, you know what I mean? Those kind of people are the ones that I notice the most confidence in.
Yeah. You know? And what happens in those moments is it has to be less about your need to speak and more about your commitment to them learning. And so I had to change what I was going to do and change how I did it so that I could pull out of everyone curiosity, interest, energy, and then I had him back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What does help me is like we were doing this assessment with everyone coming to our mastermind, and I was looking at physical energy in comparison to everyone here. I have by far the highest physical energy of everyone who will be here, like by a dramatic amount.
Explain what that is.
It measures how much physical energy a person actually has, just naturally, inherently, and the ability to just the need to keep moving, you know, the need to be active. And like one of the things Aaron tries to coach me whenever I get here is, Dad, you know, let's just chill. Like,
chill out, man. We're in the most beautiful place in the world. Calm down.
Yeah, we don't have to play paddle tennis six times and work out three times.
In a day. We got here last night and we had been together since, I think, 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And he texted me and we have 1 hour break. And so Austin's going back to like shower up and get ready for dinner. And he texted me and he's like, hey, you want to come over and hang out?
I said, absolutely not.
I've been with you for 12 hours.
So then I was 5 hours off. I know he's all right, you know.
Yeah.
But you have this, you're incredibly introverted, but you love to do stuff.
Like be active.
So I have off the scale physical energy. It actually, I was thinking about this today. It helps me as a speaker because when I'm exhausted, I know the room's dead.
You have a better gauge.
I look at the room, I go, there's no way that this room has any energy left. And so I use my internal gauge and I go, if I were the listener, would I want to listen right now? And I go, no, I want to run out of the room. I'd want to go, you know. And so I think, okay, how could a speaker get me back? I don't assume that I have the right to speak. I don't assume that I should expect that everyone listen. I feel like I have to earn the right to be heard. And no matter who you are, the moment you get up on that platform, you have to earn the right to be heard. And sometimes you earn the right to be heard by opening up everybody's mind to a possibility, or in a sense, promising a solution to a problem. You know, but it has to be something they care about. It can't be something I care about.
One thing that I found really valuable at your event was there were a lot of wins. There were a ton of wins at the event. I thought it was really, really fun. I loved that you guys had people from the inside talking about their wins, talking about their story. And a lot of it wasn't just monetary wins. With every monetary win, it was, I got to provide for my family. Yeah. I got to create a legacy of investment that's going to change the course of my relationships. And it was and even your conversation, you had your family in the back, in the very back, hanging out watching. And you kind of fluctuated between being very inspiring and excited for what you've built with this conference, this team, and all your guys, but then also what you were able to provide for your family. And it was a really cool thing, you know? And so I think... You know, but then like little things, like you guys, like you had Andy speak and that guy, he had the mustache on and he's talking about he had his PowerPoint presentation, and it was just thing after thing after thing that brought like I think you did is you created a really home, comfortable environment in a place that I think oftentimes is very sterile. You know, most of these conferences are just, you know, great speaker after great speaker after great speaker. Yeah. No room for growth, no room for personal stories. And the room was already like, you guys did a sketch about everyone being late to the conference. And this whole video, and it was like The Office
that
meets Arrested Development. And I'm crying laughing in the beginning. Yeah. So I do think we talked a little bit about this, about how do you create environments that are, you know, you build momentum for the next speaker in the next place. What would be the second characteristic that you have?
Yeah, I was going to say, even though the last chapter of Mind Shift is called You Can't Have Too Much of a Good Thing, in this situation, you can.
How so?
Because every speaker has something really great to say.
Sure, absolutely.
And every session had something really important happening. It was just, it wasn't that it's too much of a good thing, it's too much of a good thing too fast. Does it make sense? You know, people can only absorb so much. And if your goal is, and this is tricky because when you're putting together an event, a lot of times you're thinking about how important the people speaking are to you. And that almost takes precedence to how important the people listening are to you. And so you have to, what is the outcome goal for my audience? Am I trying to get them inspired? I'm trying to elevate their courage? Am I trying to help them sense their worth and how important they are to the organization?
I think even before we jump into that, I think maybe you could give us a little bit of background of you. Because we just came from your amazing event.
Sure.
But what's your story? Where's your background? And how did, you know, tell them the stuff that you kind of talked about in the introduction of the clip.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm in sales. So I start, I work with Edwin Ariave, who you guys, he was the, what do you call him? The man of the year, what is it?
The arena.
The man of the arena.
Yeah, the man of the arena.
Yeah.
And so I found him at a low point in my life, ironically enough, when I tore my other Achilles. And I was rehabbing, and I watched the video, and he was on it, and I just DM'd him. I was getting out of the fitness industry. I'd been in the fitness industry for 10 years, and 11 years, actually, and I just wanted to do something different. I wasn't very, I don't know, passionate about it. I felt it more, it was more like I loved fitness for me, and it felt like an obligation because you're really just tending to people's personalities. You're trying to be, you know, you have to change for them. Like, you're just someone to listen to a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
And so I reached out to, I just DM'd him, and he called me, or he sent me his number. I talked to him for about a good 2.5-3 hours. Nothing about what he did, just about what I want to do, which was crazy. And then he just asked me a bunch of questions, and I finally asked him. I met up with him in LA, asked him what he does, and he said he owns a security company. You know, like they do smart home automation, but more importantly, a leadership development company fueled by smart home security and automation. Mm. And so I was interested in it because I told him one day I want to speak. I want to be an actor and I want to speak and do all these things, and not knowing why, you know, and I just thought it was cool at the time, you know, like it was inspiring because I used to watch people speak and I'm like, man, that is so crazy how they can do that, you know. And then he said, in order to do that, you need more than just fitness and nutrition under your belt. You need to be able to talk to a broader audience about personal development, you know, business development, sales, building culture, and so forth. So he sent me out to from LA to Philadelphia, and I went and knocked doors, not knowing that that's what I was going to do. Okay. But then I just, it's crazy. They say that people that they're kind of like off in the head if they like do what, if they love doing what I do, yeah, you know, knocking doors door to door. And I got the itch and I just fell in love with it. And so it was, I think it was the competitiveness and like being behind other people and wanting to catch them and pass them and stuff. And starting in my fifth month when people had January and I just knew I was going to catch them. And I don't know, it was just a really cool thing. And then started recruiting, and then we built what we have today.
So how many people do you have working on your team at The Collective?
So last year we had roughly around 500 people.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 500, about 450 to 500 people with a sale.
That's amazing. And just for everyone who's getting to know you, yeah, what would you say would be the annual revenue of all that, of your entire team combined?
Yeah, last year the payout was over nearly 20 million. So it's about 19 million. Wow. But you have to also, what's, you know, you divide that by 500 people, it seems a lot, not very much, but I'm talking about just 500 people with a sale. Like they might've sold one or two and left. You know? Yeah. But we had, you know, 67 people make over six figures last year in our organization.
That's amazing.
Crazy, you know, because when people see that, or, you know, that's the whole reason why I wanted others to cross the stage. Cause I'm like, you have to see that, people have to see this. This is not normal to create something and people, you know, get enough buy-in from door to door, especially, yeah, and where people get enough buy-in and they're just really changing the trajectory of their lives, or, you know, what they're learning about themselves. And, you know,
that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's.
So tell me, what are the three, maybe two or three areas in your life you've had to grow the most to keep growing and scaling and being successful?
Yeah, I had to get, there's a book, Tribal Leadership. I read when I was doing multi-level marketing way back in the day. And it talked about being, I think it was like a stage one or two leader and shifting to a stage four or five. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be about me, like, they talk about actors, mm-hmm, are stage one or two, or singers, or one-on-one athletes, MMA, you know.
Yeah.
But I needed to shift and get out of that stage in order to grow an organization. And so that would be the first one, is I had to find a way to make it not about me. Mm-hmm. And so in my whole life, when I'm trying to fight to win, whether it's in sports, you know, whether it's, you know, in a job or whatever the case that may be, my whole life trying to fight to win, it was very hard for me to give up the recognition and the titles, winning this and that, rookie of the year, this and our, you know, rep of the year and all that to other people. But once I did that, it was like night and day. It was way more fulfilling watching them win than me. And I for whatever reason, I was scared of that. You know, that was ego, some ego thing.
Yeah.
So I'd say that is the first one. The second one would be, I think I had a, I had to peel back some layers, and I had some limiting beliefs about what I was worth. And I think that was a huge one that took up a lot of, that took a lot of personal growth to overcome. And then I think the last one was just leading, just, you know, feeling confident enough that I can lead out a team, because I was really good at selling. I knew how to recruit. I knew how to train. And now it was like, okay, there's this whole other thing that that the job did not have a title of. It was recruit, train, sell, you know, but there was this leading piece. And yeah, that one, I'm still working on that every day, you know, so, but those three, I would say.
Well, I'd say the people on your team really love you.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Which is probably the best measure of your leadership. You know, deeply loyal, deeply committed. They're enthusiastic about working with you. And I think their sense is that they don't work for you, that they work with you.
Yeah. That's going back to the tribal leadership, is like my organization, my team. It's like our organization, our team. You don't work for me, you're my business partner. You know, like I always tell everyone, like, these are my business partners. Like anytime I'm introducing even the newest rep to someone, I'm like, hey, this is my new business partner, you know, whoever it is, Mario. Yeah, for sure. That's like a big one.
How do you recruit?
You know, now it's like, completely honest, it's when I share stories of other people through my work page, or when my social media person shares stories of the work page, people just reach out.
Interesting.
And a lot of friends from when I was in college, and a lot of people from, you know, other times in my life, they just see my journey over and over. And I try not to just share. Well, now it's a lot different, but before I was trying not to only share, you know, a bunch of cool stuff, like coming to Mayakoba, you know, but I was sharing like struggles and like things that I have to overcome. Like for now, it's like, even with this, I was sharing today that, you know, I'm going to have surgery next week, and I'm doing it with a lot more enthusiasm than this, because I'm like, I have a new goal now. If you would ask me then, I would have just shied away. I would have been, you know, I was very, very depressed, very emotional about it, because they told me it would take a year to recover. Now it's like, well, I've seen Aaron Rodgers do it. Yeah. I see Kobe do it. I'm going to try to do it faster. Like, I just try to set a new goal, like just change the attitude around it, you know? Yeah. And I think people have noticed that shift throughout my, people that have been following me or friends and family, they've noticed that shift. And they're like, I want to be like that. Or I want to, some part of that is attracting me, you know?
Full circle.
Yeah.
The positive
yeah.
effect of comparison.
Yeah, from one Achilles tear to the other Achilles tear. But we kind of talked about that at the dinner, because I thought that was so unique. Because a lot of what you talk about in your personal story from stage was your first Achilles tear, and how like you were so down and out, and you were kind of depressed. Yeah. I don't know if you said depressed, but you were staying with your sister, and you didn't really know what the purpose was. Yeah. And then you reached out to Edwin and kind of found someone to kind of maybe just invest in you, right? Yeah. Really, or even that you wanted to invest in and find a return, and then. It felt full circle that we were coming to your event and this happens. But you're just a completely different man. And now it's, you look after hundreds of people versus just even trying to look after one. And that's something that I think you've always kind of tried to, you know, plant those seeds in my head. When our lives become so self-focused, we end up drowning faster than when we're looking after hundreds of people. When we make our life about the service of others, and the success of others, we tend to find more success in ourselves. But where have you seen that? Well, okay, we've been bouncing around a little bit, but we talked about confidence as a characteristic of someone. What's a characteristic that you find in someone?
I do want to summarize. I think what you're saying is really important, because success has momentum, and success fuels success. And so at first recruiting was probably really hard.
Sure.
And now you don't even have to recruit.
Yeah, it kind of comes, you know? Yeah.
And it's a much better place to be in. But a lot of times people want to get there and it's they don't realize that you were pushing a boulder up a mountain.
Yeah.
And now the boulder's rolling down the mountain. And people go, oh, yeah, he doesn't have to work for it. You go, no, I pushed it up the mountain, so it would roll down the mountain.
What was it? You just ignore my question.
No, completely. No.
Please summarize that. Please, how he just, my father never listens to me.
Yeah.
It's just so, just so we're known.
No, give me my
minute. No. I take it back. What was it like door-to-door, going to door-to-door and selling? Like, what was that initial process from, like, the first time you did it to, like...
Terrible. How was it? Do you, be honest, would you love to have an iPad and I drop you out and say,
no,
see you tonight?
I saw there was like 50 panic attacks.
No, it's terrible.
How many doors did it take?
Yeah, so the first day, I always share this because I had it's called a counter app.
Okay.
And my manager at the time was like, I want to know what your numbers are. Okay, so I can help you and figure out where you're struggling in the process because there's, you know, five things you need to do in the process of a sale, right? And so I knocked 144 doors my first day.
Wow.
People answered the door, but no one let me in their house.
Right.
And that was the first day.
Okay.
And I'm a quick learner. I'm like super quick learner. And I'm very, what's the word? It's like determined. I'm very, super determined. Yeah. That all I needed to know is that people have done it and I was watching it and that's it.
And so, it's doable.
Okay. So there's no way I'm not doing this and they are doing this. It's, you know,
yeah, you can
a lot of people, you know? And so then the next day, I mean, you know, successful people are very aware. And Edwin said that on one of our national sales calls the week before on a sales call. And I was like, where am I going wrong here? And I just noticed I was talking really fast. I was pitching the features rather than the benefits of the product. I wasn't asking about them. I wasn't making eye contact. I was just like super hyper because I was like, I'm going to sell five today. My first day. They're like, what are you going to? We're all in a room, in an attic, in a room, and or an attic in Philly. And he's like, what's your goal today? What's your goal? I was like, I'm going to sell five. Got zero.
You're close. So we're running out by five.
Yeah, but the next day, that night, I figured it out. I was not making eye contact. I was very, very quick and fast, and doing all those things that I shouldn't be doing. And I wasn't just building a relationship. I was really just trying to sell them something. And the best people that sell this best salesman will say are the people that are make you feel like they're not selling you anything. You know, like they're just, you know, sharing like why this product would be great for you, but asking you more about you first, you know? And so then the next day I sold three.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then
with no adjustment, like no one was coaching you.
No, just me by myself.
So you felt that a lot of it was just your approach to people and how you connected.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So how many doors did you knock on the second day?
Oh, I don't even know. Happened was it was a Saturday. So I flew in on Wednesday. I shadowed my manager on a Thursday. He was saying, like, you could stay with me for a week, like work with me for a week. I was like, no, I'm ready to go. Let me just try it. I just wanted to try. I didn't know my pitch or anything. I was just like, let me figure it out. I saw enough people that were successful at it. I was like, let me figure it out. That's when it was bad. But then that Saturday, he actually flew to a wedding. So I got dropped off by a technician out in the area I was working. And it was pouring rain, but it was hot, like muggy, you know, in Philly. It was Bridgeton, New Jersey. Yeah, worst city in the world. But it was actually like 45 minutes outside Bridgeton, New Jersey. And that's that next day, I think I went back to back and then a couple doors hit another and then called the tech and said, hey, can you come pick me up? It's pouring out here.
Yeah.
And so.
But you got a few.
Yeah, got three.
Did you ever go back to that first door?
What do you mean?
The first door that you ever knocked on? Did you remember the first door?
No.
Stay away from that block forever. Okay.
But see, now I can answer your question. You said, what's another characteristic I look for? And it's determination, which Nico has already so clearly articulated as part of what drives him and makes him different. And because I think it's really hard to have sustained confidence without determination. I think there are people who are confident like fireworks. They're super confident, then they lack confidence. They're super confident, then they have no confidence. Super confident, then they're insecure. Yeah. It's because they don't have the determination. They were confident, they thought it was gonna be easy, was hard, they lose their confidence.
But I have some...
I can't even, that makes me laugh because I think about, I see people on the calls, on anyone's calls, like, and they crushed it the week before, right? Something bad happens, you never hear from, but they're like, and if you want to, remember this guy is like, and if you want to challenge me anytime, any day of the week, you let me know and I'll be there. And he doesn't work with us anymore. It's so funny. And I think about people like that, like, oh, we're going, you know, like, cause they're on a high. They crushed it. They had a good week and then, or a good month, and then they're gone.
Yeah, I think confidence without determination is like a dinner table without legs. It's just the floor.
we talked about this because one of my best friends is in software sales for enterprise sales. So his highs are super high. When he makes a lot of money, he's making a ton of money. But then when he's not making money, he is really not making money. And he has these, he often will call me after like a big sale and be like, I just locked down HBO. And I'm like, sick, take a photo of yourself. Because the next time you're about to jump off that bridge and leave your two kids and your wife, like, I want you to like look at this photo and be like, today sucks, but last month was awesome. And I can get to that feeling again.
You know, but you also told him to take the other photo.
And then when he's depressed, he'll call me and he'll be like, remember what it felt like? And he'll be like, yeah, I'm like, take the photo again. He'll send it to me, he's like, just pissed. And I have both the photos and I'll send it back to him when he's low or when he's high. I always send the opposite photo back.
Yeah.
And he's like, it just kind of taught me like, don't be too impressed by my highs.
Yeah.
And don't be too sad about the lows. Like it just, the consistency and the drive and the determination. And don't define myself as a failure internally. And I think that's the hardest part. I think I know that if I had maybe knocked on 144 doors, I'd have been like, well, I lost the season. But you're like, but you know, there might be 144 doors a day for a year. Can I win the year?
Yeah.
You know, and so those internal like structures of not defining yourself as a failure, I think are so important.
Yeah.
And then what defines a success, right? You got through 144 doors. That's a huge win.
Yeah. Yeah. Growth, right?
Growth.
But most people won't see that on the beginning. They don't focus on that part. They don't see that until I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, like I don't think people notice the growth part until they've made it in a certain area or they felt like they made it. And then they look back and be like, oh yeah, that's just growth. And then they share with other people that haven't made it yet. And they say, oh, don't worry, you're in a growth stage. You know, I find it really hard and challenging for people that are like in a struggling place to look at it as growth.
You know, it's interesting. As a parallel, you know, I had surgery and my left eye hasn't healed and the muscle in that eye still hasn't reactivated, but I can't tell if it's making progress. So what I have to do is I have to take a photograph of myself every day so that I can look back and go, oh wow, it's improved. Because I don't feel like I've improved. You know, when I'm just looking at it, just the normal emotions of every day, I'm like, when is this eye going to fix? And then when I take a photograph and I go, oh, wow, the photograph is better than yesterday. It's better than last week. It's better than last month. And so sometimes you have to almost like capture snapshots of your progress because you don't realize you're growing. You're just fighting. You know, you're just living. You're just surviving. You're just working. And then you don't realize, oh, wow, I've developed these muscles. You know, I've developed these skills, you know, and I'm actually, also you look and you go, I'm pretty good at this. I don't know how it happened. And I think that's really exciting though. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people give up before they get enough down the road where they go, oh, I've really grown. I've really changed. And that's why you just have to have that other characteristic of determination, you know. And so it's interesting, confidence, determination, that's a pretty good parallel of those two.
Mm. I love that.
I think we should wrap up.
Yeah, let's wrap up. We're going to get you to do another one of these with us.
I love
it. This week. Are you down?
Yeah, I wish next time I'm just going to have my recorder on because I'm like, every time I hear you guys speak, I'm just like, oh, I want to write that down.
Okay, so wait a minute. Admit it. Okay, when Aaron asked you to join us for the podcast.
I'm scared.
You're terrified.
No, because I wasn't, you know, he's going to ask me.
Right. No, but, yeah, that's a whole
that's
point.
The thing. Yes, that's the point. The, yeah. No, but you know, go ahead.
No. I just want to say, you know, I think scared was an understatement. You might have been more terrified.
But now I didn't say anything.
But now you feel more confident to do it, right?
Yeah.
Because once you've done it, you realize, oh, see, here's the thing. You don't know what we're going to ask you, but you do know who you are. And so, see, the moment you get your perspective the wrong direction, don't know what they're going to ask me. The uncertain world out there, it terrifies us. The moment you turn back around, you go, but I know who I am. Then you actually refine your confidence.
Absolutely. And what's crazy is I don't know why I was scared, but I'm not afraid to have coaching in front of people. Mm-hmm. You know, you've done it to me before, and you've asked me if it's okay at Top Gun events. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with it because I want other people to learn.
Right.
And, you know, and I always forget that. And just basically what you just said is like, I was pretty much scared because I was like, it was like, I wasn't thinking, I guess, about the effects of other people. Remember, you're talking about when you're on stage, you got to remember it's for what does the room need to learn? Mm-hmm. Not what do I want to share, but what does the room need to learn? And that's that same thing. Mm-hmm. Like that goes away. And you realize, hey, this could be helpful for other people.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about this podcast is that we're not trying to be perfect. We're just trying to be helpful.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. When we started the pod, I mean, I think we figured out how to pivot in the pod when you walked in. I was like, oh, this is great. We're bamboozling him no matter what. He's going to jump.
Oh, he didn't tell you I was coming?
He didn't tell me.
He said, oh, yeah, just come in. Whenever you get your scooter thing, come up. Just come over.
Well, he was like, oh, I gotta wait for my scooter. And I was like, oh, excuses, dog. We're like, he's like, it's so far. I'm like, dog, it's around the corner.
I'm gonna give you this.
No.
You walk around the corner. I'm gonna get my crutches. Like, around the corner is a football field away.
You didn't ride a bike?
I was like, yeah, I was determined. See, that was called being fearless. They didn't have my scooter. They said, it's not gonna be here for another hour. And I said, oh. I won't see that bike out front. That's gonna hurt if I fall. But I went. I rode a bike over here.
We gotta get a little bit of his leg. No, I just told him.
Shoot his leg.
No, somewhere in here we gotta get him walking.
We have him driving away on his bike alone. No, but I know that I was just like, oh, we'll come over and hang out with this guy. I figured you could at least come to the room and chill. We'd wrap up and go hang. But no, I think it's good. I like the pod, and I like that we just kind of have randomness and people come through.
And I can't imagine a better episode to have you on than the one we're talking about people who we find compelling.
Yeah.
Because both Aaron and I both find you incredibly compelling. Yeah. And we're really honored to have you here.
Yeah, new character unlock, Nico. Okay, wrapping this up. You guys can rate and review this podcast and you can subscribe to the YouTube, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere that podcasts are listened to. We'll see you guys next week.